their little hearts are red inked to death, and they come to me a little bit like, here's my heart in the palm of my hand, and it's beating, please don't smash it, because it's been smashed before.
Yeah.
So they come with a little bit of a nervous hesitancy. They're a little gun shy. And so creating a warm, safe space is what I often do for people. But if more writers could do that for each other and stop the whole zero sum game and all of that, and just like stop competing and just like be there for each other, it's a big ask. But if it can be done in a writing group or between even just two people, it's a great service to the creative output that could come from that, you know, when people start to live in that place of trust and safety so they can really create, because creativity is a risk. It's a risk-taking venture.
It's hard. And it makes such a difference to have people in it with you.
Welcome to Fable and the Verbivore.
I'm Fable, Beth Stedman.
I'm the Verbivore, Laura Johnson.
And this is a podcast for writers who love to read.
Readers who love to write.
And anyone who loves
words.
All right, so today we are very excited to have Anne Croker with us. Anne is a writer and editor and a writing coach, as well as a podcaster who also podcasts about writing. Her podcast is packed full of super practical advice for writers. It's super accessible, and just I had a lot of fun getting to explore through some of your podcast episodes recently. So, and her website, which we'll have linked in the show notes, is also packed full of resources. She's got courses that she offers and a blog where she writes about writing and the writing life and all of that. And we are just really, really excited to have you here today. Anne also is our first guest who really specializes in nonfiction writing. So we tend to kind of specialize in fiction, but it's really fun to kind of expand that and get just a different view of publishing and writing and all of that from that nonfiction perspective. So thank you for being here with us today, Anne.
Thank you for having me.
Laura has our first question, and same thing we ask everybody because we always want to know.
But I am going to ask it a slightly differently. So we usually ask, what is your first connection with story? But after going through your Instagram, language and words are so important. I'm really going to ask, what's your first memory or connection with story and language? Like, looking back, when were you first kind of drawn to those things?
I grew up in a family of word people. My parents were both journalists and they loved books. So I was surrounded with bookcases packed with books. So I've never known life without words. And my parents would come home from the newspaper smelling of a newsprint and ink. And so I have just been steeped almost literally in it and surrounded by words. It's just, that's all I know. So I think I've always been a word person. However, I will say that of everybody in my family, now I am the youngest of only just two kids. There's four in our family. I'm the youngest, and there was a 4-year gap between my brother then 4 years later me. And as a result, everybody was a little more advanced in their literary capacity. And so I lost every game of Scrabble. And they wielded a bigger vocabulary. They had read already way more books than I had by, always. It was always that way, perpetually. Yeah. They're always that much more ahead of me. And so I never really thought of myself as the writer or a writer, because they were all the writers. Even my brother is a writer too. And so I wanted to be a writer.
Yeah.
But I didn't think it was me. Like, I thought that was everybody else in the family. So that's how much of a word family I was. I didn't even think that was really in my future. So it took all the way till college before I really embraced any kind of writing identity, where I stepped into it boldly, confidently saying, this is who I am.
Yeah.
I think it was always a yearning, always a longing, but always seemed a little bit out of my grasp because of the family that I was in.
And how did you work past that? Or like, how did you get to that place where you really could own that identity, especially coming from that kind of background?
That's a great question, because this is a question a lot of writers struggle with, is that identifying as a writer. And we resist sometimes, even when we're actively writing. We don't sometimes call ourselves writers.
So
how did I get there? Well, I remember confessing that I wanted to write. Like, I was walking along the sidewalk at the university town that I was in, and I was with my boyfriend at the time, and I had tried all different majors because I didn't think
I changed majors four times.
Same thing. Okay. Yes. And then I was enjoying my English classes, but like, I didn't really want to be an English professor, I didn't think, but I was taking English classes, and we were walking along, and I said, I don't know what to do, and I don't know what to be, and I don't know what to major in. And he said, well, what do you just right now, without thinking about, what do you really want to be? And I said, I want to be a writer. And I just, it came out, and you know, that lifelong, that childhood dream, I blurted it out. And he said, well, then be a writer. And yeah, easy for you to say. It was a, like, there was a major at that time we called telecommunications. I suppose it would just be communications now, but he was a telecom major. And he suggested that. And I said, ooh, no, I don't think so. Because I knew some of the things he was doing with video, and that wasn't interesting to me at that time. And then he said, well, you could be a creative writing major. And I said, what? Didn't even know that existed yet. I think we were, it was like before the internet. So it was harder to figure things out. And so I did discover that it, being a Big Ten university, it had a, quite a robust creative writing department for even for undergrads. And so I started taking those courses, and that's where it happened. Here's how it happened. And I would never have guessed this when I signed up for my first creative writing 101 or whatever it was. It was an introduction to both poetry and fiction. They didn't have a nonfiction option at that time. They do now, but they didn't then. And I thought, because that's what I love to read and I love stories, I thought that's what I would flourish at. And I got into it. I wrote, you know, a reasonably okay, like a passing grade short story. It was okay. And I'm sure that if I really worked at it, I could have figured it out. Now I know that as a coach, I know I could have figured, I could have unlocked the mystery of plotting even the type form of short story. But then we switched to poetry, which I didn't know anything about. I only knew form poetry, you know, from whatever we read in, in high school, or Shakespeare or somebody. And I'm like, I can't do that. You know, some, especially form that's so, you've got those tight rules, woof, and then like that. And of course, they introduced me to free verse poetry, where there's so much, so many options for how you can enter into a poem and express yourself. And at that time, there was a book that at the time, I am dating myself, I can't believe I'm about to say this, but there was a brand new book called Writing Down the Bones, which isn't new at all now. But multiple courses, I ended up taking many courses, and many chose that book because they saw how it unlocked creativity, unlocked people because of the free writing, because of just diving into your memories. Anyway, I began writing poems one after another, and it was like unleashing memories, metaphor, all the things that can make a poem rich. I was just it was an explosion I guess that was my identity. And because it was poetry, and because I could get on the phone and say, hey, I think I'm a poet, everybody's like, oh, we never had a poet in the family. And so because it was different, it wasn't journalism. It wasn't journalism. My brother's in the advertising world. It wasn't advertising. It was something completely different. And that allowed me to have my own little space in the world of writing that had nothing to do with what they were. So I never felt like I was competing with somebody in my family, and then I could flourish. And then the tools of poetry are excellent, by the way, because you learn all of the literary tools at your disposal in a really tight form, in a compressed form. And now you can take all those tools and use them now in your prose, whether it's a novel or nonfiction. So I think that all of that made me a much better writer with everything that I did, from freelance writing to essays to articles for magazines.
Sure. So how did you get from that writing poetry to now being a writing coach? And like, what brought you to coaching?
I've done a lot of things. I've tried a lot of things. I think that's okay. I think writers should try a lot of things.
That's a great thing.
I entered some poetry contests right around that time, because I was so steeped in that, with some success, I might say, and I'm happy about that. But then I moved on to other opportunities, like freelance writing really was the biggest thing I could do, both the kind of freelance writing where you're submitting to magazines, or now we would say magazines or online publications, and also freelance writing where you might write for a company. You might be writing their web copy, or you might write for their newsletter.
Yeah,
or
I've done
you might,
a lot of that. Yeah.
So that kind of work. Okay, so I was doing that. Mm-hmm. And as time went on, I was invited to be a part of an editorial team for a very large online organization that doesn't exist now. But at the time, in the world of blogging, well, I I wrote a book. I kind of skipped over some things. I wrote a book and it was published. And then I started blogging and then I wrote another book. And the blogging was sort of on the rise and about to peak. I was riding that wave. And it was in that time frame. So now I've been a freelance writer. Now I've written two books and I've been blogging for a while. And now I'm interacting with bloggers. And it was in that timeline of the online writing world that I was invited to be on this editorial team. And on this team, we were networking with bloggers who were on the rise or already known. And we were acquiring their work. We were either asking them to write something for us fresh, or we were asking, could we reprint something that you've written that was fitting really nicely with the themes and topics that we were publishing. And that gave me editorial experience. It gave me a bunch of new relationships with people that I didn't know it at the time, but a lot of them would be names that I could throw out that you might know. So it just turned out to be the perfect thing at the perfect time. And the person who was mentoring me both in my editing, helping me improve as an editor, but also guiding me, I was becoming a stronger writer by becoming an editor. This is often the case. You probably find that just even in a writer's group when you're reviewing people's, right? Like my writing was getting stronger. I was getting better at editing. And I was building all these relationships. Then I actually joined a second editorial team because they were kind of connected. And I'm getting into too much detail here, only to say that the person who was the bridge between all of that was my mentor. And she said, you should become a writing coach. So that's a long story to say there was a moment when somebody said to me, you should be a writing coach. And it was new enough. It's still kind of new in the publishing world. But at that time, it was really new. And I said, what's a writing coach? So she said, you should go look it up. I think you would be perfect. So I did look it up and we talked some more about it. And she said, you actually coach people while you edit. Mm-hmm. And that's the relationship you build with the writer. You're investing in them along the way. Not all editors do that. Some editors just make the change and move on. And you want them to understand the why behind it. You want them to be a stronger writer when you're through with the editing notes that you're giving. Mm-hmm. If it's somebody who is still kind of maybe freshening up their grammar, maybe it's been a few years and you know they've need a little bit more training, I might link out to an article that they can learn more. At the time, this is what I was doing, and so I looked into it, and there were really only a few people doing it at the time, so I was sort of making it up as I went along based on what little I could see there, because I didn't want to be an agent. I thought for a while maybe I could be an editor at a publishing house, but it ended up that the writing coach role was perfect for me because it fills the gap.
Yeah.
It fills the gap at various points in a writer's career or journey, because sometimes, for example, you're not quite ready for the agent yet, but you don't know how to get there. So some coaches might be the right fit at that point. Yeah. You might be stuck might just be trying to get started and you don't have any idea where to start, where to begin, where should I focus my time, my resources. Mm. Maybe bring in a coach then. If your writing group can't really advise you or your searches on the web are just confusing you, you know, so the writing coach, at least my approach is to personalize it when I'm working one-on-one with somebody.
I was just going to ask then like what a writing session with you would look like or a writing coaching session would look like. But I guess I imagine it's really different than for each client and person you work with or.
Yeah. And I think a lot of, you know, different coaches have different approaches and that rhymed. So the different coaches will have maybe even a methodology that they apply to almost every session or a series of questions that they ask to get to the root of whatever the struggle is. And so I can't say how other coaches, and you didn't ask me to read the headlines or whatever, but I will say, yes, that I approach each person's goals, concerns, struggles. I try to get in there, identify what's going on. I do have an onboarding process. And in that process, there's a form that they fill out. And sometimes just asking themselves those questions can be very revealing for them. So that by the time we get into the session, they're already thinking in a different way about some of their concerns and questions and struggles. But yes, I do customize when I'm working one-on-one. We're on a Zoom call and I'm listening. I am going into the files in my mind and sometimes on my laptop and just trying to make sure I can address the need, help them move forward with confidence and have a plan between that call and the next one if they have more than one call. lined up. If not, I tried to send them off. If they only bought one call with me, I want to send them off feeling like I got that one thing figured out and maybe even two more things too. And I feel much more confident moving forward. That's my desire. Can't guarantee it, but it seems like most of the time we're able to at least address the most pressing thing, whatever that may be. But the needs that come to me are so wide ranging. Some people are trying to just launch a blog for the first time and have an online presence for the first time ever. And other people are trying to work on a platform. So I did end up creating a few opportunities for people. I have a platform group. It's a membership group that allows me to interact with all kinds of ideas and give them, you know, whatever the shifts in the industry, you know, if there's a shift, I can address it in the platform and keep that information fresh. I have another course that's about creating a nonfiction book proposal. And so that I tried to, there's a little standardization there in that, you, you know, you can walk through the process of putting that together. So that's a course, but you could always add on a virtual session with me. So lots of entry points based on the person's need.
I actually took, in preparation for this conversation, your free course on the 7 openings for a sentence.
It's a long title for a very short course. Yes.
Make your sentences sing. And one, I love the music metaphor in that. But what I love about it is it's something that no matter where you're at, I think it's nice to have that refresher of there are many different ways to write things. And sometimes we get stuck into these patterns. And what I love about the materials, not just that one that you have out there, is there's so much that's useful from anyone, any writer, fiction, nonfiction, poetry, at any stage, just good tips, tricks. And I love how on your Instagram, you do kind of look at the musicality of words, the how words come together, and that poetry side definitely shines through in that way. As you deal with, from the editing perspective, helping people find their own voices and editing to find their own variety, how to work on the type of things with authors who work with you?
So how do I help them maintain their voice when I'm working with them? Is that the question?
Well, finding the variety that is theirs, I guess, and the in their voice.
I think that is one of the biggest challenges that editors have, maintaining and respecting the writer's voice when they're editing them, because it's so tempting to insert your own when you're not ready to just sort of like step into that space. But, and I don't know that I have any real secrets to how I can coach. The editing I do is always within the context of coaching these days. So I never want to be the last set of eyes on somebody's work. That sense of empowering them. I loved how you were giving us that idea that there's so much out there. It felt like, you know how the collecting that a magpie does. Just, ooh, that's good. Ooh, that's good. That's what I sensed from that, you know?
And
I think I try to maybe train people to do that a little. I never really thought about that way, but I'm always looking for great stuff. And that's why I give usually really high marks for almost every book that I read, even if a lot of it wasn't relevant. Like if I can get one nice nugget from there, then thank you book, you know, for existing for that one nugget. So I often will then just try this, try that. And then they try it and it does, I suppose it does affect their voice, but I like to think for the better because now they have more tools in their tool belt. They have more things they can draw from to apply to new situations, to get the rhythm that they're looking for, to compose paragraphs and sentences. You know, there's higher level and lower level attention we can take to our craft. And I mean the crafting of the wordplay and all of that. I think just the more we listen, I know you did an episode once on imitation, and I love that idea, like just listening to other authors and how they're doing that. And one way to do that is to do what you did, actually imitate what they did and then rework it. I've actually done a whole episode about Benjamin Franklin's method, and he had his own kind of, it was copy work, but not. He talks about it in his autobiography. Approaches like that, that have people to pay that really close attention to what is available to them, to expand their options. they'll still maintain their voice. It's just as if I learn a new word that I can incorporate into my vocabulary, it doesn't change my overall voice. So I think writers can maintain their voice, but enrich it when they have more tools at their disposal. I'm not sure I answered your question, but I still think that's helpful.
It was a great answer.
Do you find that there's when you see a lot of people, are there common issues that you deal with writers, or like struggles that you see more often than others? I imagine that in this day and age, like building a platform would probably be a big one, or finding your readers. Like I imagine you see a lot of those kinds of struggles. But I also feel like I hear from a lot of writers, like I've talked to a couple writers who've had feedback from agents or editors about their voice not being different enough. Like, so I do think there is kind of a common thing I hear about finding what your voice is and how to make it unique enough and those sorts of things. But I'm just curious, yeah, as you talk to people, what are the things that you see, the threads you see commonly?
I think a lot of people come to, maybe it's because I'm a writing coach, they're coming to me with a predisposition to feel this way, but they're insecure. They're hesitant. Maybe it's imposter syndrome. Maybe it's writer's block, that there's something inside that's kind of got them stuck or nervous and doubting themselves. And so because of that, then it probably is inhibiting or affecting their voice. It might not be the reason behind it. But yes, I think that, you know, as a coach, a lot of what I'm doing is helping affirm what's working, affirm the parts that are working well, so that they don't stop doing what's working, you know, because that would be a tragedy. If they come, help me solve my problems. And then you focused only on what was all the things that needed attention, which they came to a coach. There probably are things that need attention that we can improve. But if they don't hear what they were doing right, then they might neglect that or think that by my silence, by my not commenting on that, they might stop doing it. Like, don't stop doing it. That's good. So I think that, you know, just affirming people is really helpful to help them overcome that. But you were asking about other challenges. Yeah, because I work a lot with nonfiction writers, I think the biggest one right now that's a big frustration, if they're trying to move toward traditional publishing, it is platform. And becoming the person that people come to for whatever that big topic is, that big idea, that big theme that is your subject matter expert, to be that person, that's hard. It's hard to stand out. There are things you can do. And I actually formed the membership for that reason, because I was just so frustrated on behalf of people. Like, they're like, where do I go? What do I do? Like, how do I do this? And I could send them to, you know, ideas. Well, you could try a lead magnet. You could build up your email list. Here's a free program from Amy Porterfield. And they're like, okay. And those are helpful. I mean, these people are putting out great products, some of them for free. So that was part of it. But like, to piece it all together was really exciting, to be able to give people one place to go. So that was addressing a big need. And I don't know how well it's doing that for people, but that is like an ongoing problem. You get a killer idea, you have excellent writing ability, you cut this thing you're excited about, and then, you know, you're being told no because your platform numbers are dismal or whatever the depressing word they choose to describe you with. So because, again, being a person who's working mostly with people who are writing nonfiction, I think that is it. Now, I've worked with people who write fiction. I've worked with people who write poetry. They wanted to start submitting to literary journals and lit mags. And that's been kind of fun too. Yeah. And sometimes they just don't know how, like they just need instructions. So one thing about writing coaches is sometimes we are only needed for a short period of time, and then they learn, and then like, okay, I know what to do now. And then they can go off and be fruitful and create great work. But so I think just like, I don't know how to do something, and I'm like, here's how you do it. And then they move on. So that happens to me a lot. Yeah. But yeah, I think the voice thing comes back around a little bit to the insecurity is inhibiting them from being more confident and curious too. Like, can I explore a different way of, because the way we express ourselves on paper is often different from our verbal voice, but it should still, if you read what I wrote, I would think that you would say, hey, that sounds like Anne. I was reading this book. It's called Simple and Direct by Jacques Barzan. I'm probably massacring how to say his name. I don't know. It's an old book. But in there, he says, you know, we talk about writing like we speak and being conversational. But he said, really, writing like you speak, if you spoke really tidy, cleaned it up, right? And I agree with that. I'm paraphrasing very poorly, but I do agree with that. Like, yes, I think conversational is what everybody is accustomed to, but let's not be sloppy.
Yes.
Because if I wrote like I speak, I would have unfinished sentences that would stop in the middle, and then I'd change gears, and I'm talking about something completely different. There's no cohesion. There's no continuity.
I never realized how much I did that until I started editing a podcast. And it's like, oh.
It reveals all.
Yes. And I imagine that insecurity, though, also plays a role in building your audience and your platform and all that, too. Like, it can both hinder you from putting things out there that would attract people, but also then when you don't build that audience, then it feeds that insecurity, too.
100%.
It's like a vicious cycle.
Right. And it's more risk. You're taking more risk to put this thing out there. I don't know if it's going to fly. I don't know if people are going to respond. And then, like you said, crickets. Okay, well, yeah, I'm really a nobody. And it might have nothing to do with that. And, you know, could have just been the timing. It might be some other algorithm issue with something on social media. So yes. And you never know when something will take off. I was just reminding the community when I did a coaching call the other day that, do you remember that you probably saw it in October, 2020, there was a man who was doing TikTok videos. And then one day his truck breaks down and he didn't want to be late to work. And he pulls out his longboard from the truck and he jumps on the longboard, grabs his Ocean Spray Crayon Raspberry.
Yeah.
And if you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
And he flips on Stevie Nicks, Fleetwood Mac, Dreams. Anyway, so it's very like, the lighting is perfect. I'm assuming he goes to work in the morning. So it's probably like really lovely, warm lighting. And then he's drinking his Ocean Spray while he's longboarding down the highway, smooth, everything's smooth. And then he like finishes a drink and he looks out and he sings along with the song. And it went viral. Like people were now copying it. Everybody's on like something, a skateboard, longboards, roller skates. They're all trying to drink the cranberry and have the song fun. It became a viral sensation. So I was just telling the group, you know, I was reminding them, and I think this is going to apply to any kind of writing, I think. Mm-hmm. All he did was show up and do the thing he loved to do, just like he always did. He had no idea that that was going to go viral. By the way, it went so viral. Ocean Spray gave him a giant, like, whatever, like a year's supply of Ocean Spray. And they bought him a truck because his truck had broken down. No, that was part of the story. Somebody local, I think, gave him a truck. And then they raised money and he got him a house because he had been living in an RV in his brother's backyard.
Wow.
Okay. So anyway, the point is not that we're going to get all these things. The point is one day he did what he was already always doing. Mm. He was clicking on the TikTok app, pulling up the music, doing the thing. And he did it this was not new for him. This wasn't his first TikTok. He did silly dancing things that didn't have that viral sensation. And for whatever reason, this one went and took off. And we don't know. We can't always explain why the world says that. I want that. And I want more of that. Right. So we creators, we too show up and we just keep creating our work and we faithfully show up. And you know what? If he hadn't made the whatever, I'm going to make up a number. I don't know how many he had made, but let's pretend he made 100 other TikToks by the time he made this one. He knew how to do stuff. He was already over the hump of the technology. He knew how to turn it on. He knew how to turn the music on. And he liked that song and he'd already played a lot of other songs. So he was used to lip syncing and he lip syncs it perfectly. And it's so cute. Yeah. He already figured that out. So when we do our work, when we write every day, when we figure out how, like, I don't know what kind of writing you might do, like uploading to Wattpad or I'm thinking of fiction things, you know, but like, you know, you figure stuff out. And like the first time you do it, you're really nervous. Your writing is younger, but you mature in your writing and you mature in your understanding of technology and everything grows with you. And maybe one day, there will be a time, and maybe none of us will be viral, but there'll be a moment where you go from 10 to 50 followers on Instagram because you did a funny reel. You know, you just don't know what's going to happen because you just keep showing up and doing the work. And this, I think this is actually maybe most important, is you do it not hoping for the viral. I mean, you can hope for it, but you do it because it's fun. You do it because you love it. Yeah. And I think if we can all as writers remember that, like, you know what? I'm going to write today, not just because I want to complete my manuscript, because I do want to finish my work in progress, and not just because I want to be published, because that is really something I am aspiring to do and working toward.
Sure.
But I also love writing. I love telling stories. I love working with words. I love whatever, you know, whatever kind of writing you do. And if you enter into it, embrace it for that reason, then you'll always be having a wonderful time as a writer because you're doing the thing you love.
I love that so much. It made me think too of how many authors have written 5, 6, 7, 10 books before they ever get one published. And I think sometimes it's so often it is just showing up to the work and keeping going with it. It made me think also of I was listening to your podcast earlier today about 5 writing strengths you need to succeed. And you talked about persistence as that kind of last one and that key that really influences all the others. And I actually choked up when I was listening to it because it was like exactly what I needed to hear. Because you try to be consistent, but after a while when there's nothing happening, it can get a little bit like, wait, why am I doing this again? And it is just so good to be reminded that I'm doing this because I enjoy it and it's fun and it's play to get to come up with words and make up characters or whatever it is.
And you know, what you bring up an interesting point, because I think there's an intersection there of the doing something because you love it and persisting. Yeah. And if you can find that, that's like a great place to be because people give up. Yes. And it's the people who stick with it who have a chance. Like, of course, you're not going to succeed if you give up. You know, yes. It's over. Game over. But if you stick with it, if you keep showing up, maybe, you know, someday you'll be able to have that opportunity. And yes. I was actually during the freelance era of my life. I had a mentor then too. And she was so generous. She's actually, we were local at the time and she was a local freelancer. So everything she was telling me, all her secrets, she didn't seem to hold anything back. Maybe she held back some secret. I don't know. But she was actually, you know, it was the same territory. And to some extent, I'm like, you're so amazing. And she said, you know, there are people who are better writers, far better writers than I am, but I kept showing up. I keep doing the work. I don't give up. And that is why I think I'm a success, not because I'm a great writer necessarily, but because I keep showing up and doing it time and time again when other people stop. So I'm glad you brought that up as
a reminder. My husband and I talk about sometimes how it's kind of a statistics game, you know, like the more you do it, the more chance you have that something's going to work or that it's going to get better, or that someone's going to find it or discover it or whatever.
That's right. You're going to raise your odds.
You have to kind of play those numbers a little bit.
That's right. And there's no guarantee. So that's the fun intersection there, you know, where you can try to find both. It's like, okay, I'm really hoping the odds are going to be in my favor, but I'm also having a lot of fun. But it's also hard work. I mean, I don't want to pretend like writing is always, you know, like a dancing in the park amongst the flowers. It can be hard work. But I don't know. Sometimes there's the reward of the hard work too. At the end of the day, when I got to create something, and it could be, for me, it could be almost anything at this point, like a YouTube video or a podcast episode or a blog post or an Instagram update, anything right now is like, just, I feel so good. Even if it was really hard and I had to power through, that was really satisfying and gratifying. Yeah. Do you feel like that?
Yeah, totally.
Absolutely. Well, and it's something that wouldn't be out there in the world if not for you doing the thing that you did. And even if it just makes you feel good, it's still worth it because it's done its job.
I love that.
I think you've already given some incredible advice. And again, looking on any of your resources, all of that has a bunch of great advice as well. But do you have any closing pieces of advice for anyone doing the work? Anyone who needs that encouragement? Anyone who is, you know, even looking to find some guidance but not really sure how to even ask for what it is they want? Any advice that you have?
I will say a couple of things that come to my mind. This is just a few thoughts. I once heard Dani Shapiro say that she gives this advice to her students and she practices it herself, which is touch your project every day. And it's so simple, but when you get that in your head, that's a really good one. Like, because maybe it doesn't mean you're actually, maybe you don't have time to write, but you do have time to like reread it and think a little bit and maybe take one note, right? Like it keeps your mind so that it will keep chewing on it and keep solving whatever problem you might be facing for fiction in a scene. You're trying to work out something that's, I don't know how to get them into that. I don't know how to overcome that problem. So, you know, touch your project every day. And then you just mentioned, Laura, how do we ask for advice? And a writing coach is a pretty big investment and people may not have that kind of money to sink into that kind of interaction. There are many other ways to get that kind of input. And, you know, you two have each other maybe for certain levels of input. Mm-hmm. And so there's a time to ask for that. And in the stage of the creative process or the creative development of a project, you would ask for different kinds of input based on where you're at in the timeline of that project. If it's not done, don't hire an editor, which would be a type of input. Like, it's not done yet. But maybe there's a point where you're getting deep enough that a certain kind of beta reader who is prepared to understand that it's not really polished yet, and they won't start, you know, picking apart commas, that they could still tell you, oh yeah, I love where this story is going. I love these characters. I love what's happening here. So you could potentially select a beta reader, but I wouldn't like blindly ask anybody because it's not maybe in its more complete form. But this is one, here's a really practical tip that I think could be very useful no matter what. So keeping in mind that we used to talk about HOCs and LOCs. Do you remember that in like maybe composition class or something?
No.
High order concerns, HOCs, high okay. order concerns, and they used to call it low order concerns, but people who are grammarians and Oxford comma fans said, can we just call it later order concerns? Because low sounds like you're saying it's not important, but it is important. And I would agree with that. So we yes. now I've seen it in like different textbooks and things, the high order concerns. Mm. Now we're going to call it later order concerns, LOCs, HOCs and LOCs. So high order concerns are things you look at where you're, you know, is my idea working here? Is it clear in nonfiction, yes. especially? Is it clear in fiction? You know, is this plot? Is it,
does it make sense? Yeah.
Yeah. Is it flowing? Do you like these characters? Those are big high order concerns. And then from a writing perspective, from the actual writing, then you'd start looking at organization. Is it flowing? And this can work for fiction or nonfiction, right? Are these flashbacks distracting? Or in nonfiction, you might say, you know, are these ideas in the right order? Is it making sense? Okay, what's the flow here? So that's still a high order concern. But then you move down, further down into not lesser, lower issues, but later issues. Now, after you've started to move through the organization, would you start to think about sentences? Because during the organization or idea phase, you might delete an entire section or paragraph, right? So why did I nitpick about the comma when I was going to make the whole paragraph go away?
Yeah.
And so you wait. So just being aware of where you're at in that process and then asking for the right kind of input from the right kind of person.
Yeah.
You pick a proofreader at the end, not the beginning, because that's a later thing. And that's a role in your writing life that's appropriate. It's not needed in the HOC stage, but you could actually have somebody look at high order concerns, even when your project's completed. So there's a timeline, there's HOCs and LOCs, but there's one more thing. Can I tell you, do we have time for one more?
Yeah.
Okay. So years ago, I led a group coaching session and one of the people in there was a teacher. And she said, you know what I think would be helpful? So I'm giving her credit because I don't want to take credit for this. She, as a teacher, learned at a writing conference from the National Writing Center, I believe was the source, this approach to requesting input on your writing. Since then, I've used it with so many clients and one of them said, I'm going to call it bapping it, which is like that little toy. Remember that? Bap it.
Yep.
You will never forget it now. So it's BAP. Each of those represents something that you're going to ask for. So if you're requesting, this works in either direction. So if somebody says, will you take a look at my manuscript? You could actually use this and say, okay, would you like me to, and I'll walk through the three things in a minute. And then they're like, oh, okay, well, I think I need this, that, or the other. And then they can ask for that because you've kind of clued them in on this approach. Okay. But then if you're asking for help, then you can ask, okay, so here they are. The B stands for bless. And so this works really well when you're dealing with somebody who, you know, they're kind of just getting back into writing. They're feeling a little nervous and you don't want to crush them. They've been crushed before and they're just, it's like, I wrote something. And so they themselves ideally could say, could you just bless this? And that's where you just want to point out everything that's working. Everything was working well. And I'm not going to talk about what's not working. I'm only going to talk about what's working so that you know you are doing some things really well.
This would have been really helpful for us.
Totally would have been.
So now you can see how that is not so much about a high or low order concern. It's more about the timeline of the project or the state of the writer.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we know ourselves. We know when all we really, really, we think we want more, but we really just want to know less, especially in the very early stages when you're just like, do you think this idea works? You know, it just can you bless it? Or like, and just tell me what's working, you know, and then, you know, you can ask a more specific question. But the A, the A is to address. So this is where you might have a really specific thing. This works with beta readers. This might work with an editor. It might work with your first reader, whether that's a best friend or a family member or somebody that you just want their first impression. You know, you could ask for them to address a certain thing. So for example, with a beta reader, you might say, you know, I'm struggling with dialogue. I need it to sound more realistic. And I've really been working at this, but I'm ready. I need you to tell me if it's not working, you know, or circle any of that seem not like in line with the character. So just that's address. All right.
Yeah,
so
addressing a specific issue or a specific
exactly. Yeah. And you can do multiple things. Can you address these three things? But when you ask for that, by the way, they're supposed to bless too. Like, don't stop blessing. So they're supposed to, these are all the things that are working. Here are some, and here are some thoughts on the dialogue. And here's what I think about that flashback. And your character, you came, it's not his voice here in the third chapter, whatever. Like, guess what happens? When you tell them exactly what you want input on, the person giving feedback no longer is staring at this thing like, I don't even know where to start. Yeah. And people who don't know where to start, who have a background in the English world, they just mark all the commas and semicolons and that's all, like, I don't know what to do. So I know but I do know where there's a missing quotation mark and I can put that in. Yeah. So like, that's a later order concern. Important, but maybe not at that stage. And it's maybe not what you need.
Yeah.
So being able to say specifically, you know, you could address 10 things. I mean, it doesn't really matter how many, but tell them what you need so that they know what to give you. Yeah. And then the P is press. Like, just press in, full court press. Give me everything you've got. Don't forget to bless. I do have a couple specific things I'm worried about, like, you know, whatever they might be. Like, I'm a little worried about the organization. Should chapter one come before chapter two if it's nonfiction, let's say? Sure. Do I have the ideas out of order? That's my biggest address. But otherwise, just like, if you see anything, I am just about to send this off to an agent, so it needs to be clean. And if you're willing, I'd love to have you do that, you know. And so that would be fully bapping it. And so there you go. I think, and then if somebody says, hey, will you give me some feedback on this? You can now say, hey, let me explain bless, address, and press quickly. And then you tell me what you want me to give you. And then they'll be like, huh, well, I definitely want you to bless. And you're like, that's always part of it. And then they say, well, actually, and then hopefully they can give you some things they would like you to address. Yeah. Or if they really and truly say, I want it to be bapped, give me all you got, then you can give them all you've got.
I love that.
That's fantastic.
That's super helpful. Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
It goes so well with some of the things we've been talking about. So thank you.
Excellent.
This has been incredible and just so helpful and encouraging for me personally. And I know
you're
listening. I'm already excited to like edit it and get to listen to it.
Me too.
Yay. I do have something, if you don't mind. I would love to just make something available to your listeners. I have a resource. It's called 52 Creative Writing Prompts. Now, it wasn't written to be prompts like people who write fiction and they get these, you know, prompts that what if kinds of prompts. It's more an opportunity. Some of them are really writing exercises, so it would be appropriate for fiction or nonfiction writers just to kind of give you a boost of creativity. So if they would go to annkroker.com/fable, sorry, verbivore. It's just
okay.
Fable. So it's just annkroker.com/fable. And when they get there, there will be a form and they can just fill that out and I will deliver to them for free, full access to this resource that can help maybe get their creativity, you know, back on track, give them a little boost. There's 52 of them. They can space them out over the course of a year, or they can just like dive right in and do them all in whatever that would be, a couple of months, 3 months. Anyway, that would be my pleasure.
To offer Thank you so much.
Thank
That's
you.
Incredible.
You're welcome. Well, it's been such a treat to spend this time with you. And I just love what you're doing. I love how you're serving writers and readers and all who love words. You just do it so well.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
It's been a joy to talk to you today. So thank you, Anne.
It's been such a pleasure.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.